Oh, that
Good morning.
is
Oh, how funny.
Oh, you
That's
scared
actually pretty
everyone.
scary.
That's actually really good, Jeff. I love it.
Oh, I will.
That
It
is Jeff. Yeah, Zoom kind of screws that up for you.
I will explain that I go to a Halloween party every year with a theme.
Oh, yeah?
And our friend's theme for the Halloween this year was Christmas.
Whoa.
This is my Halloween
I love it.
Christmas outfit. That's weird. Might as well, though, because they put out Christmas stuff before Halloween anymore.
Yeah. It's crazy that Christmas stuff was out at like the beginning of October this year.
Yeah, it was.
And like the Halloween stuff's like gone.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll do what Kevin did. That's
Well,
good.
I mean, you can't hear me. I tried to talk and it's just like because the
You're all
mask,
muffled, yeah.
yeah, I'm all
Yes.
muffled. That
Oh,
doesn't
the uniform.
Did you guys,
Yeah.
Eric, I love it, dude. And Eric's got a if I'm not mistaken, a prop.
Oh,
There it
there we go.
is.
I'm scared now.
You can't
There
hardly
we
see it because
go.
of the Zoom shit.
Yeah, it's a lethal weapon, though.
Eric, it looks like you're kind of like coming out of the wall, so it's like even more creepy.
I love it. Jeff came for his bottle of bourbon. He's ready to run, win. All right, guys. Well, listen, thank you all for joining us today on the special spooky Halloween edition of the Digital Embellishment Designer Meetup. Matt's got a great some great things to talk to us about. We're really looking forward to a great conversation with you guys. If you're any questions, any trends, any things that you want to talk about, this is our safe space really to talk about all that cool stuff that we're working on. But before I hand it off to Mr. Redbear, I'd like to thank our main sponsor, MGI Digital Technology, for making this possible, as well as our co-sponsors, PaperSpecs and the Digital Embellishment Alliance, which is part of the FSEA, which Jeff is a part of. So, guys, thank you so much for your support. It means a lot to us that you're able to help us get really like-minded people under one roof. And without any further ado, let's pass it off to Mr. Redbear.
Let's pass it off to the guy who's losing his voice. Can everyone hear me well enough? Am I really okay? Good. I just wanted to make sure because I can barely hear myself. So, welcome to this edition of the Designer Meetup, and happy Halloween, Samhain, Dia de los Muertos, whatever rendition of it you do celebrate. It's not. I have a lot of friends who are personally very invested in this day of the year, and I have to endure their enthusiasm for it either 365 days a year, or at least for the entire month of, and probably for half the month afterwards. Rotten pumpkins, I guess you could kind of say. So I guess I can't quite share your enthusiasm. It's like I'm kind of I was done with it weeks ago. But it's fun to see here in the office here we have good witches, bad witches, ghosts. Everyone's kind of dressed up for something. But me, I'm just tactful. That's just me.
That's scary enough.
Yeah. I
As
thought you were
opposed to
going to
people.
dress up, Matt, like your the LinkedIn post. I thought You that's what it know, looked like today.
when
Yeah.
I went in the past, and this is getting kind of personal, but I don't mind sharing it. In the past, whenever I did dress up for Halloween, it was always in leather drag. So that, and then I would,
Oh,
yeah, like the armbands and the harness and the leather
God.
pants and the master's cap and all. I'd do all that, you know, gate stuff. And then I would go to the door and answer it and give out Halloween treats to these tiny little kids. And they were like, "Oh, what is this?" Because it's not like anything else they'd ever seen in their life. Matt,
So
you could be the Hulk, man. We could just say that you dressed up as the Hulk for today. How's that?
that's
There
true.
you
It's,
go.
am I green enough?
You're green enough.
Yeah, I
Hey,
thought
so you
about it. I thought about finding some green makeup, but I thought, ah, you know.
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, A lot of
I'm sure
work.
there's one of those spirit Halloweens in a empty office depot around here somewhere. For sure. Sabine, how are you?
Pretty good. I'm ready, getting ready for Halloween. It's going to be 1,000 kids coming through.
Oh, nice.
Beautiful. I kid you not. It's my friend's place. I've done this for years now because, nice outfit there, Eric. See, I left my head in the, I'm not ready yet. I kid you not, it's 1,000 kids. And last year we ran out of candy at 8 o'clock. We turned off the lights, which doesn't stop them. They still knock on the door. So. But it's a lot of fun. I love seeing the costumes and how creative kids get.
Yeah, well, especially year after year. The cultural aspect of it all keeps shifting as we get older and older. We see a very different, I mean, in my day, we were Casper the Ghost or Wonder Woman. Yeah. So, and that's
you were Wonder Woman? I would have wanted to see that.
No, you were a cowboy or a ghost or like Wonder Woman or something like that. You know, it's whatever you could get at the five and dime store.
Yeah. Well, this year, it's always, what's the Costco special? You can always tell. I'm like, it's the same costume we've seen like 50 times now. It must be the Costco special this year.
Must be. So I noticed that David Drucker is on this call.
Hey, David.
And that we have another new person, Therese, who is in hiding, which is okay. Camera's on or off. That's all good. And so I'm curious about, and Katie, of course, Katie's here again, and it's always good to see you. But I wanted to touch base with David before we moved forward and find out your reasons for being here, essentially.
Because he's a friend of mine. That's what friends do, Matt.
I was actually thumbing through LinkedIn and saw your advert and just clicked on it.
Very cool.
It was easy as that. So.
Yeah. This was moved to a Zoom platform not long ago, which made it a lot more popular. Mm-hmm. And I see that Adam has jumped on the call. Hello, Adam.
Hey, guys.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Good. Doing great.
Listen, let's kick this thing off because I think there's one cool thing that we talked about last month.
Wait, only one?
Well, we talked about a lot of cool stuff.
It was overwhelming.
But Matt, you were experimenting last we spoke with mixing toner and foil, and this time the toner on top of foil. So, Matt, kind of walk us through your idea, your process, your experimentation. What did you kind of figure out?
So what we figured out is we have a lot of considerations to, we see them as obstacles. You have to find out how to move past them. It depends on your equipment, what you're running it on. We're dealing with the Irides and the MGI. So what we want to do is add a little character to the foil overlay, because when you lay down foil, you don't get shading. You get the texture of the foil itself, but unless you do an additional underlayer that is like an image map or something, and then you put the foil on top of it, you're just laying down flat foil. You know, it's technically raised, but it creates a smooth, flat surface on top. So if you're trying to emulate something like a sphere or a 3D shape that would normally, if you had like a cube and you set it on the table, the light's going to hit it in different ways. It's going to be a little darker on one side, a little lighter on the other side, et cetera. You get the idea. It's all about trying to create more perspective or character. So I was tasked with a job for one of our high-end clients, Make-A-Wish Foundation. And they came up with the most interesting, I love Marina DeLuca. I'm trying to get her on these calls because she comes up with some crazy stuff that then she brings to us and we have to bring it to life. So it's truly a collaboration. But she wanted silver foil on a crystal, like a disco ball. And in order to, you know, to do that, it's pretty easy. It's just like, you know, you create the foil, you just do this thing. Here's the finished piece, actually. It's a little invitation. And it folds out, and it folds out, and it folds out.
Very cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and then there's texture on the flowers. I don't know if you can see that. Mm-hmm. And we had to, and then it's on the back, the bottom as well. So that when the whole thing accordions up, everything has to line up and meet.
Did you print this two-side or is this laminated, duplex laminated?
It's two-side.
Okay.
And it's so, two-side. Okay, keep going.
So anyway, that's a finished piece.
Kevin and I are like, question.
So of course we have the interesting die cut, which I had to create. You had to get this to line up with this. Everything had to line up when it folded. And that was a challenge. We had to do like three tests in order to get that to happen. But the idea was, you know, originally just to do this. So I'm like, well, that's pretty stark. Mm-hmm. So why don't we run it back through the iridesce and put color on it? Okay. So we have the before and the after. And it's just a shade of color. It's actually kind of a rainbow gradient kind of thing.
I thought that wasn't an option because the foil was raised slightly.
Yeah, did that so like?
That's why I love these calls. I learn new things all the time.
Yeah. Now it's equipment specific, and it's going to be dependent on what your equipment will bear. The iridesce was fine with it, so I'm assuming that an iGen would be as fine. But as far as a Ricoh or, you know, someone other yes. manufacturers make a machine, I have no idea how it would work.
So Matt, how hard were the registration on your second print pass to make sure that you're hitting the right areas of the foil? Did you have to experiment with that, or did you leave in a lot of like open area so that you didn't
get look the at these targets? They yeah. don't line up.
Right. I know that's gonna happen. There's a lot of thermal shocks happening in there, so the final effect looks great, but how did you design
it? Hold this up again because I'm trying to crawl in and see it closer up and I realize this is not going to work. Hold on.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah. You can see the targets don't line up from the first pass.
It doesn't matter in the case of the disco ball, I think.
In this case, I created this with the overlay where the foil had fuzzy edges. Mm-hmm. So it was generated in Photoshop. It's to fit the space specifically. And then I marqueed it and added a Gaussian blur to the edges. You do that by using your direct selection tool, and then you add a diffusion or a fade to the edge. You choose how many pixels you want to go in, and you just keep hitting the delete key. Has anyone here ever done that? It's really interesting. Yeah.
The choke?
Yeah, it chokes it in, but it depends on the radius that you select.
Right.
How high was the polymer?
That was about 53 microns.
Really?
Well, wow. 53 microns, you didn't have any issues running that back through your digital press. Has anybody else here ever tried
to did.
Matt, you know what I want to say. I need a sample, right? You know this.
Yeah, that looks pretty cool. Yeah.
So what we did is we ran it through first for the CMYK, ran back, duplexed it, made sure we lined up good because I have to be able to register this on the back too. And then put the foil on it with the MGI.
Right.
Then went back to the MGI and put the varnish
on
the rest of it. So there's varnish on together and all that type and text. So, and then it goes back to the MGI. Iridesce, foil, overprint, varnish.
Varnish, right at the end.
So we're going back and forth between the machines for all four steps.
Wow. Have you tried the overprint to get more like a complete color effect? You know, like what is promoted when you do sleeking, that you basically put like a solid color on top to get this metallized look?
Yeah, you can do that as well. I just wanted a haze on this.
No, I understand. I just wanted to.
Yeah, but I'm
curious. Can I have a little sample? Because I think that's.
Yeah.
You know, we just had a webinar on foiling, among other things. And the questions were like, we couldn't keep up. Quite honestly, we started with 40 questions. And at the end of the Q&A, we were 31 because people were asking follow-up questions and new questions. And
so that was with Katie, who's on this call as
well. That was Katie. Yay. Katie rocked.
So Matt, let me ask you, you did the polymer, the raised polymer before the print, is that correct? Before you
the varnish was last. That way it didn't have to go through the iridesse. So the raised foil went back through the iridesse for that overprint. Then it went back to the MGI to do the varnish.
When you say, oh, the MGI did the varnish.
Yes. The raised polymer. He's saying that the
raised areas on here was the last step.
Last step.
Oh, so you basically put the polymer on top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, everything. Got it.
It was the now last step.
So the first foil that you put down, how high was that?
That was saying about 50, 53 microns.
Dang. Kevin and I are impressed.
Can you go back to how you actually registered the print on top of the foil? Going back through the iridesse?
Yeah, the operator
that's where I would struggle.
Yeah, that the operator can only do so much because you're running it back through the machine again. And so that's why I made a really soft, fuzzy edged image that if it shifted an eighth of an inch, wasn't going to make any difference.
Yeah.
But that's also why I ran the polymer last, the plain varnish last, so that it wouldn't pick up any debris from the fuser in the iridesse.
Follow up, when you say varnish, is it like an overall or is it a spot?
It's spot. It's just, I use very little varnish. There's very little varnish on here.
Okay.
No, it's just over some words.
Got it.
Has anybody else?
Over the flowers.
Has anybody else ever kind of tried doing this with digital embellishment, foil and toner as a second pass? David or Katie?
No, I probably will after this meeting, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have any kind of effect, any residue that was left on your rollers then after from none?
No, we thought it was
going to be. No impression left after that from?
No, we thought it was going to be really dirty. But I think because the coverage on the CMYK overprint to the foil was so slight. I mean, the file looked terrible on my screen. It looked awful. It's like, is this even going to be any good? Is this even going to show up? It was probably 5 to 8% coverage. It's very little. But on top of that silver foil, it really shows up. So you don't have to put a lot on there. So I would recommend that if you were to try it, start with as little as you think that you would tolerate, like 20%, 40%. I've done it where I put 100% black on top of it, and it just looks really stark. It just looks too, I don't know. It's almost gothic in a way. It's just hard. It just
very Halloweenish.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
is the iridesse UV ink or what kind of ink?
No, it's a toner.
Dry toner.
Dry toner.
Excellent.
Hey, Matt, on a project like that, imitation and a unique die cut, what type of die cutter do you do? Like, are you using a rotary type or is it just a regular batten type die cut?
Digital.
Okay, Jeff, so for this job, we had to line this up. We had to line this up really good. So I had to do some trial and error, and that had to be done on site. Otherwise, it would take forever. So you'll notice on my press sheet in the corners, there's a little black dot. And when I flip it over, the black dot's mirrored. And that little black dot talks to the Zund, and it's a robotic CNC scroll cut. It's a flat table. It has the blades scrolling around on top of the paper, and that's what we use for all of the prototyping. This is just a prototype because our customer requires an actual live proof that we can give to them, and then they hold it and they pass it around their office and they say, yes, this is what we want. And then we also had to, you know, prove that this all lined up here. And there's no way to do that. I mean, if we had to have a die made and the die was made wrong, well, you know, that money would just go down the toilet. And this fact, that would have had to have been adjusted three times. And we would have had to throw away two dies. So for the setup, we used, you know, the table cut here. But for the finished job, we actually had a die made. And then that's going to go out for proper die cutting.
How many pieces did you wind up producing?
I think about 1,500.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was within that justifiable range.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the die cut, the die cut gets you really smooth creases and folds.
Yeah.
And that's what we really wanted to accomplish. To get these smooth creases and folds, we have to send it through the Horizon creaser first. Right, and then we send it to the Zund to do the cutting on the outside.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a very multi-step process. So once you get past 100 or 200, we're going to have a die made for that.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, man. For sure.
It's a fun project. It's a fun project.
And have they seen the reaction yet? I mean, what's the reaction from the customer? You don't know yet.
Well, they've actually held it in their hands.
And?
So I can only assume that it's good because they said, go ahead and do the job.
All right. No,
did you mean the customer or the recipient of the invitation, Kevin?
I meant the customer. Like, were they, because I've never seen what Matt just did. I've heard people try it. I never tried it back when I was at MJ because I was, in my mind, kind of scared of blowing up the printing engine or the fuser, or I didn't feel like I've never. So the fact that Matt's out here actually on the cutting edge doing this stuff, is there any way you could send us like a high res picture of what that actually looks like afterwards?
When I get it all done, I'll be able to do that.
Yeah, because I'm dying to see what that looks like up close. Because on Zoom, it's kind of hard to to appreciate it. But I'm really curious because in my mind, this is opening up a lot of different design possibilities. Where
endless.
Well, I mean, you could basically make it foil that you want if you're able to overprint it, right?
This has been the one big differentiator between Tona and Polymer so far. So
and I could do a raised color foil, So if this works, I mean, this could be huge, Matt. And I don't know many other people who've tried this before. So I think this is you're on to something.
Yeah,
I really like him. He's crazy enough to try these things.
Well, we also have two different fusers for this machine. We have the good fuser and we have the bad fuser. So they will swap those fusers out. In other words, they'll have one that has more mileage on it or just doesn't perform very well. So for running tests like this, they'll put in the bad fuser.
Yeah.
That way they know they don't. Yeah, then they know they don't ruin the good fuser for the job that comes in after it. It only takes a few minutes to swap it out. It's kind of a pain in the butt, but it's worth it.
I don't know a single printer who doesn't use that exact strategy with their digital presses. They always have the good and bad fuser depending on the job that's coming through. That's so funny, man. You guys do that too.
Yep, all the time. And it depends on the job that we're running too. I mean, a lot of times if we have like a really big job that we know is going to beat up the fuser, put in the bad one.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Very cool. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely.
That was a lot of good information. Please share like a high res image of what that foil looks like. And if we can actually start printing on top of our foil to basically come up with any foil color that we want, or imagine like variable foil colors, variable gradients. I mean, you can get bananas.
I actually would like to credit where I got the idea, because as you know, when we were at Printing United, we were in the Sharp booth at that kiosk, and the kiosk right next to us was Mark Jeeves with Color Logic.
That's right.
And so his technique is you can take metallic flake toner and add CMYK to it, come up with this whole gamut of what you're trying to accomplish, including what looks like gold foil.
Right.
So you don't need, or the gold flake toner. So you don't need gold flake. You just need the silver. And from that, you can create anything. And so I thought, well, we have lots of silver foil. Why can't we do the same thing? You're just taking silver and adding CMYK to it. I encourage you, if you have access to a machine that they could put in their bad fuser and run a test for you to give it a try. Because I thought you could create a gradient map and make a cube and put shading on the sides so that it looks like it has that perspective.
Yeah.
And you don't have to register that perfectly to the edge as a hard line. You know, feather that edge.
Yeah.
Make it fuzzy. And then if it shifts, you know, a 1/16 of an inch, nobody's going to know any different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I think that
will be a great FSEA Gold Leaf Award entry. So make sure.
Oh, yeah. Save one.
Make sure you keep one of those aside.
Yeah. And I'll probably
get it in mine. I asked first, Jeff.
Well, I can wait on mine. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably do a video on it anyway. You know, I took some footage, but I'm not done with the job. I've still got stacks of paper out there. I'm still trying to run this thing.
Mm.
I've actually seen some really cool effects kind of like that where the image is underneath. So, for example, NAPCO just sent me their box. And if you look here, it's a transparent.
No,
he froze.
Pillars of light hologram.
Where you can back.
Damn it! Every time I try to talk, but it's. Am I still frozen?
No,
you're good. Okay, and so it's like a transparent pillars of light, and I was wondering if you guys are using a lot of this type of effect. I don't know whose foil they're using. I know Adam is Adam still on, but Adam uses a lot of clear foils as well. Have you guys seen this effect before yet or no?
Is it a foil, Kevin?
Yeah.
I think it is because it's got that ring.
Yeah, that's
holographic
a
feel.
That clear holographic
foil. Just a holographic foil, yeah.
Yeah, that we talked about, what, 2-3 meetings ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, you can get that look with like a cast and cure over the top. Well, I don't know if NAPCO does cast and cure.
I don't know.
But it's just like what Matt did with that invitation. I think what's really cool, as you're mentioning, he's actually creating really sort of a diffuser foil look to that globe without having to go to the expense of a diffuser holographic foil. He's able to use a more standard silver foil and then create a similar look to a diffuser holographic, which is cost savings and can look very similar. So that's very
Jeff, I'm not familiar with diffuser foils. What exactly is that?
That's a different, it's a holograph, you've seen it a lot. It's a holographic foil, but it doesn't have a design in it. It's a rainbow effect. You know, you look at it, it changes color as you rainbow as you look at it. It doesn't have an actual pattern, like holographic pattern, besides it being sort of a rainbow effect to it. You know what I'm somewhat similar to the sample you sent. It's a little different, but that's the kind of look that Matt's getting with that globe, which is you know, similar to that, which is super cool.
Matt, do you think it would hold the registration more easily if you wouldn't go 53 but go lower?
I was thinking the same thing, Sabine.
I don't think it makes any difference. I think it just has to do with how the machine picks up the sheet.
And no problem feeding?
Nope.
Dang it.
Nope.
Interesting.
I love it. There's always something new.
Yeah. And that was considering that I was sending this back through with foil on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
That was the other thing I was impressed about. Yes.
Now, advantage, most of it was on one of the
sheet. You need your mic.
You put your mic down.
Mic down.
Most of it was on one end of the sheet, and most of it was on the other end of the sheet.
Huh.
But again, I love it. He does things that officially you're not supposed to do. And this is what I like about Matt.
I know all the OEMs are cringing right now.
Yes.
And we got Sean. Sean, how you doing? Welcome.
Yes, pleasure to be on my first digital embellishment designers meetup. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude, Sean's an awesome guy. He's running digital embellishments at Konica now. We just did a little podcast, but Sean, introduce yourself to the community, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Now, I don't want to take too much of the time away from our, this is a designer's meetup, not a Sean podcast, but you can certainly go take a look at that. And, you know, just happy to be part of the community here. I spent a long time over at EFI ViewTech and, you know, did some neat things with different value added services on wide format printing and what could help get more share of you know, brand buyers and wallet. And so embellishment is right up that alley. I'm so excited about you know, some of the work that's being done here. And especially I just jumped on as Matt was showing that disco ball. I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I don't cringe when we see things like that. I'm the guy right. That's like, let's do it, you know, but 0 to 100. I think it's fantastic. I'd love to be able to see more of that done. Yeah, didn't want to comment too much, but you know, you mentioned Mark Jeeves and the Color Logic stuff. I spoke with him last week. I know him again from a previous life as well. And one of the cool things I think that sector brings to the table that is otherwise just becomes challenging on the design side of it is metallic gradient, right? And so on that diffusion foil, like you talked about with a consistent rainbow, is one thing. But if you wanted to go from, you know, one, if you have a 2 or 3 color corporate logo and you want to have a gradient at the back that literally fades from one to the next custom color, that's really tough to do in traditional foil. And Mark makes that software so easy. You know, makes that software so easy to use with Illustrator plugins. So really cool stuff. For those that haven't checked it out, definitely look at the Color Logic.
Very cool.
You may not have recognized Sean because he's keenly in a costume of a printing industry executive. Really, really nice costume, Sean.
Is he win the bottle forever?
Dress up like I actually know what I'm doing. No,
yeah. Very cool. No,
additionally, when you're talking about, you know, these overlays, you get that holographic foil board. Is anyone else using that Mira holographic? It's a holographic substrate. It's metalized. Mm-hmm. It could be holographic or solid, and you can just as easily put toner on top of that as well to make a solid color or gradients or whatever. And we've done that and then sent it through the MGI to do a clear embellish on top of that. And the way that it lenses the holographic effect through the CMYK all the way down to the foil board underneath, it's absolutely mind-bending. I mean, you know, you don't need mushrooms or anything. That just absolutely blows my mind every time I look at it. And it's really good for packaging because it scores and folds and bends very well. It holds up.
Very cool.
Very innovative.
Actually have some samples of that, but not with me, so we could cover that in a future meeting if anybody wants to go over that, is working with those metal substrates as well.
Very cool. Very cool. David, you were telling me you were working on a super, super project. Are you ready to talk about it yet, or is it kind
well,
of...
Well, I have to talk to Sabine about that first.
Give me a chance.
Yeah, so I'll just say this. Where I have experimented in new technology, I am still rediscovering and testing in old technology. And this particular piece is based on embossing and embossing actual metal. You know, we started out with this, you know, just as an idea. And I was given an open budget to produce these books. That's what ultimately they are. And I had an idea and a photograph of what I wanted to do, but I was consistently told that once we begin to put metal into the dye, and it is a multi-level dye, that it would probably break the dye, but I had to try it. So we worked with it on paper first, and that was really successful. And then we used this metal, and I'm not as familiar with metal and the gauges of metal. And so we had to go several times, and each time I was using a slightly thicker metal. And luckily we didn't break the dye. My standard on, you know, whenever I speak with a supplier and I have an idea and a direction that I want to go in, and they say, you know, we can't do that. You know, it's beyond tolerance. What I say is, I'll pay for it.
Right.
And more 99% of the time it works. It's just out of the normal commodity of what that supplier normally does. So, you know, this to me was a huge feat of and successful in it. And, you know, we're going to have really long legs on promoting this. So,
oh, yeah.
When is it coming out? When are you guys going to start talking about it?
You know, I gave first rights.
Sorry, I was slightly distracted with that event and other things.
Yeah, no,
it's going to be in the next week or two.
Oh, so better.
Give us a moment. We're working. Yeah.
David, what was the die made of that you were able to emboss?
It was a brass die.
It was made of brass.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, through the expense. I mean, the die itself. I work with a group called Metal Magic, and you know, I had given a for you, Jeff, in Princeton, in Philadelphia, and I had spoken there, and one of the pieces I held up, which I did maybe 15, 20 years earlier, Metal Magic had said, "I think we did the die for you on that." Mm-hmm. And that opened up a conversation because I've always bought my dies through my vendor, not directly through a die maker, but this was unique. The production only was 8 pieces by the time we're done, but they're really, really high end, tactile wise, visual wise, and you know, so I had this opportunity. I had the opportunity to break dies and start over if that's what needed to be, and I had the timeline to do it as well. So, you know, I was just figuring out, you know, so we build the thing first, then what do we do at it? How do we begin to promote that? How do we begin to teach what we did? And, you know, I've found that when I put something out, I usually have followers that are going to try that trend as well. Yeah.
So. And I think it's really important, David, to continue with moving back into the past as well as moving into the future, because there's a lot of old technology that can be adapted to new techniques. And to be able to marry all that, that's when you come up with all these really wild stuff that people never thought of before. So us old guys, it's actually an advantage, you know, to know what it's like to strip a plate by hand or make color separations on film, you know, that type of thing. I would love to be able to take more analog technology and use it for the production of digital, because you can digitize anything anymore, but if it's from an analog source, it will have a different look and feel. Hmm. So I think that's really important to document and let everybody know how that's working. So
Sabine, I'm gonna let you have it first, but then I want it for post press after you're done. Okay.
Well, actually,
you always come to me for the photos and everything anyway. Pardon?
I have a podcast with David soon, so get in line, Jeff. You're going to have to get in line, buddy.
You guys are killing
you. You always get the images, you know that, if David approves, lets me. So.
You guys can have it first. I'm good. I'll wait.
I'm joking. Oh, we got our friends from American Printing on Nicole, Therese. How are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you. Things are going good. We're doing some fun things as well. So it's always great to catch up in here. We created a really wonderful MGI 101 brochure that just really highlights how to use the piece of equipment. And we did that a while back for some of our creative labs that we do here. So. Right. That's been really fun.
Oh, that is.
And and it's a great tool for our clients to use, talks more specifically. But yes, we are. And right now we're just playing with uncoated substrates.
Oh,
thank you, Therese. That's what I was wanting to ask. So tell me more about this.
Well, I'm just saying that we are starting to really pursue more heavily. I know the Skodax and even some folks with the MGI are using uncoated stocks by laying down a varnish or something like that. And so we're working on that with our KM1 and our toner base technology. So more to come on that in these meetups.
Very cool. Just so you know, Matt's made a couple of videos on the tricks that he uses on how to get around that. So it's, again, no two papers are going to be alike. And,
right.
And there's different ways to do different things. But yeah, let us know how that goes. That's really.
Oh, we absolutely will. I know people have accomplished it, but we're looking to do something a little bit different with that. So I will for sure keep all of you up to date when there's something to report. We're excited though.
Awesome. And you know, everybody seems to have cracked their own code and everybody has a slightly different technique. When I was up at Printing United, I ran into Christy Panther.
Oh, sure. And, she does a great job with it.
She claims she's got a method that nobody else is doing, right? That no one else has figured out. And she won't even tell me what it
is. She won't tell us. No, she's that time she has to kill us. And yeah.
Oh, I think I know what it is. She's using the clear toner from the Iridesse.
Well, that's old. That's
I don't. I will tell you that I've been to her shop. Yeah. Nicole and I both have been. And so, yeah, she's got some really unique styles.
Yeah.
Very great. Do you know or are you teasing us?
I'm just saying I know that it's very unique.
Okay.
I'm teasing you.
Yeah. Ryan, you're doing a lot of uncoded stuff too, no? Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of uncoded testing right now with the ZRX. We're basically trying various types of uncoded media, and then putting it through the machine, seeing what's possible, what's not possible. I think what's been very interesting on this is finding that balance between, I mean, we want the uncoded media because we want that uncoded feel. You want to feel those fibers, right? And the more, I'm just use lamination because it's an easy one, right? If you put lamination over uncoated media, you know all you're going to feel is that laminated top because it's so thick. So what we're playing with is we're finding that balance between being able to put coating down so you can still feel the uncoated fibers, but yet still get good edge definition on the digital embellishment, because that digital embellishment needs that smooth surface to lay down nicely. And that's kind of, okay, where's this balance? How can we get a good homogeneous surface, get good edge definition while still being able to feel those nice fibers? So we're doing a lot of fun stuff with that.
Are you going to be flooding the whole sheet or just the areas, the whole sheet?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So how with the ZRX, that starts with a flood coat unit. So it will right. flood coat. Actually, I have a really good example. So we're actually doing some invitations for our open house right now. This is on an uncoated material. And so we have all this fun little detail work on it. And we're actually playing around with like a soft touch to see how this is going to work out. So
soft touch coating, right? Or
laminate. Soft touch coating, yeah.
So is that an Oculus, Ryan? Is that an Oculus soft touch?
It is, yes.
Oculus, okay.
Yeah. So right. So we're playing with stuff like that. And I mean, when you start putting particulates on the sheet, right, that's not going to make the sheet exactly flat. So we got to figure out, right, how are we going to make that nice and even? And so far our tests have been really successful and we're excited to keep dialing it in more and more.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can realize that, dude, to be successful with digital embellishments, it's really about experimentation, and everybody's got their own recipes, and whether the paper, the laminates, the varnish, the thicknesses, the speeds, the temperatures, the percent curing on the lamps. So a lot of this stuff is just experimentation. It's mostly science than more science than it is anything.
So for the printers here, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Have any of you tested the Nina embellishment paper yet?
Can't get it?
I can't get it either.
Seriously?
No kidding.
They advertised it. I love
these sessions. You learn all the, yeah.
That was part of one of our, the facets of our research that we were doing, especially after Paper Specs Live, Sabine.
Thank you for being there. This was fun.
Of course. Yes. Nina had a beautiful piece there that my colleague Brandy and I, our minds were blown going, oh my gosh, Nina's finally got it. Like we can, something available from a resource that is has longevity. It's not going anywhere. came back, can't get it. It's not available.
Wow.
Did they give
not
you
a, not on the market? Not on the market yet.
It'll be ready in X, or are they just being silent?
Silent.
Huh.
Oh, that's, you know me. I love.
Oh, pick a scab, Sabine.
With a bone.
Yeah. But... You go pick the scab. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know me.
Just for my own awareness too. This was referencing. You're talking about the classic embellishment.
Yeah, scene, Nina right? Classic embellishment.
They're still a little white line. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
You know,
okay. Sean has the secret source. He can get
that's it. That's
it. Well,
yes, Sean.
Well,
I mean,
we've already talked to Christine, some a little bit of work there. And one of the open actions I actually have is to circle back with them because, you know, I'm new to the Clinica group because we had done some testing. I don't know if Ryan's maybe done the same. It's not exclusive to one embellishment OEM. I mean, I know their white paper says Scotus all over it. It's not exclusive.
No, they're reprinting
to
it.
Yeah, it's what they're doing.
I know they're reprinting it.
So that's why I need to go back, because I need to go complain. I'm surprised that you can't get it. Yeah.
So, Sean, I can tell you that because they gave us basically the last of their Scodix batch, because they're reprinting it, because when I spoke to Leonard, he basically said, oh, my God, it runs on MGI as well. We got to, because, as you said, it said Scodix front and center. And so now they're adding the MGI into the mix. But if you can't get the paper...
Yeah.
Yeah. What can you do?
Well, and so we continue. I'm actually in our Ramsey, New Jersey headquarters today, because we continue as Brian does as well to develop other lines. You know, work on the lines, test other lines, and see what we can do that potentially may not require a pretreated paper at all. But you know, as we already described, some of the workarounds that you can do with underprinting, and but it's getting that perfect. Yeah.
Joey's had a secret sauce.
Yeah, so your hand up.
No, I was just curious if, you know, I thought for sure Fed Rigoni was going to come out with a new stock to replace their Tintrinetto and the other one.
Yeah.
Because we had great success here with Tintrinetto and with the other one. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful, and you didn't lose any of the uncoated properties that people love.
Mm.
So I was hopeful they would.
Yep. Do you know why they developed that paper, Therese?
No.
Do you know the story? Anybody know the story? It's for the oil, like the cooking oil industry.
Oh, that's the one. Yes.
So that if you had oil that was dripping off your bottle and it hit the label, it wouldn't get absorbed in and make it all yellow. It would just repel off. So the
Tintrinetto
was built to repel oil, and they realized that it works really well with embellishments.
So why did that, I mean, why?
Mohawk bought Tintrinetto, right?
No.
Fedrigoni, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Other way around.
And they just launched their current lines, but I don't think Tintrinetto is part of them, but they're stopping in the U.S.
I thought GPA was distributing. I thought GPA was distributing the Tintrinetto in the U.S.
That's where I would get it from.
And they don't have it anymore?
Nope. They haven't in a while.
No.
I just used up the last of what I bought in house. Nicole and I just used it up. We had about 150 sheets left that we used.
I feel like we should invite all the paper vendors to the next embellishment.
They're not coming here. They would be in the hot seat.
Exactly.
Well, who do I have from Fedrigoni that just reached out to me? Hold on one second.
They have all these launch parties now for their papers that they're stocking here.
Interesting. Interesting.
Well, we could ask Jules who we'd recommend.
Yeah, Tomaj Pearson from Fedrigoni had reached out if we ever had any questions. So
yeah,
but yeah, otherwise questions. Jules would be a great resource.
Well, if you want to share his email with the chat, we're all going to send him. He's getting like 20 emails after this call.
Anyway,
we need the Tintrinetto. Where are we at?
Okay, I won't do that to him, but I'm sure you can find him. I will definitely send him a message, though, because I actually thought they were working on something.
Interesting. It could be, right? It could be. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Nicole. Awesome. I'll send him an email.
He said if we had any questions.
You do.
Hey. That opens a whole can of worms.
It does. Yeah,
it should. And I think a lot of the problem, like specifically with the Nina stock, is that it has to filter down to a market that will bear the transportation and shipping and stocking of the product.
Oh, the 5,000 like, tons?
Yes, yes. I mean, you're probably a large user, but down here in Florida, there's probably not a lot of use for it. And that's having to ship it way down here in the peninsula and stock something that just maybe may occasionally be used. I don't think they're willing to do that.
Right.
Well, it's not an option because they don't have it in the first place. Right, Nicole?
I know.
I was just going to say, Nicole, we haven't been able to get it yet.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Very cool. So listen, any other cool projects that you guys have run in the past month? Anything that you guys want to show off or talk about or challenges that you've overcome?
Any fun Halloween stuff?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Well, I just showed this.
Yeah.
So what did you do there? Yeah, tell us more about that piece.
This piece, Creeping It Real. Creeping It Real. Our print is scary good.
Awesome.
So this is our copper foil in the candy corn section. And then outlining our boo. And our boo is a single pass of pearl foil. We experimented. We were actually doing two passes of the pearl foil, but we were having some issues there. So we ended up actually reprinting the card itself. And we put like a 7% screen on the ghosts in the back or that were under the boo. So it gave it more depth and dimension.
Fortunately,
we started with the pearl. And so we realized we had to go back to the drawing board a little bit, but that's part of what this game is. Right. And it turned out fantastic. I've actually gotten several calls this morning. The other thing about these pieces, and we've done Halloween now, Teresa, I think for 4 years, also we had the MGI. So for this our fourth Halloween, and it every single time lands the day before Halloween. So I actually had one of our university clients say, I'm so excited that this came because I put it out. Our students come around, college students come around and trick or treat to each of their professors. And I post these every year. So the kids look forward to it. The 20-some-year-olds look forward to it, which is cool. And I said, they'll really get, is Creeping It Real? Still cool kid lingo?
I don't know. My kid, I don't understand half the words he uses when he talks to me.
Yeah, so, amen.
Stigma this.
Well, that pearlized foil is, you ran that on the MGI, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. What's it, where, if you don't mind, who supplies the pearlized foil?
Good question.
So it's Kurz?
Kurz.
Is it a Kurz product? Okay.
Yep. Kurz, so we've used it several times. The transparency, it depends on the project. Sometimes we go, we want more transparency, and then other times we want less. So this was
the opacity of it can be controlled by print underneath too.
Yeah. So which is exactly what we did with those ghosts.
Wait, explain that a little bit more, Therese.
Well, I'm just saying, if you want a more opaque pearl foil, you can always print underneath in a white.
Okay, got it.
It's a workaround. Very clever.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah, because I've noticed that foil is quite different on a dark surface versus a light surface.
Absolutely.
Has entirely different properties.
Yes, it does.
Do you use that foil a lot too, Matt?
I've used it some. We used it last holiday season. We'll probably use it again this holiday season.
Yeah.
Nicole, we've played with it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Holiday for sure. We've done that with our holiday cards too. This, I think, is the first time we've done it for Halloween. We also have a piece for...
Excuse me, Nicole. I didn't get my Halloween card.
A tailor company? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I will send one to you. We have extras. I will send one to you, my dear.
It's too late. No, send it anyway. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
I don't have a date on it.
Are you guys doing your holiday cards now, or are you guys getting ready to ramp those up, or
is it always,
forgets, right?
We're actually working on our calendar right now.
I was just gonna say that's our main goal.
Yeah. How about you, David? Are you working on your holiday cards or
my personal holiday card? Yes, I was thinking about that yesterday. Once again, going back old world, very textured gray cover weight, a slate gray, and I'm going to engrave white on it.
Ooh.
And it's really going to be simple, but it's going to be, you know, well stated. And, you know, it goes hand in hand with the gift that we're giving out. So.
Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful. And this paper specs, do you guys do a holiday card or no?
No, we did a while back, and that basically broke the printer and bindery we worked with, because we went completely overboard. Right. So we're trying to keep it a little bit more low key, but we, if you've seen the name badges that we do for our event, so we're really going all in there.
Oh, I really, I saw a lot of the pictures from the name badge where one side was digitally embellished and
right.
Was,
that was a huge hit because people, the attendees didn't, I think, Nicole, you didn't look at this, did you? They didn't realize it till I pointed it out. And they're like, wait, what? And so then all of a sudden it became really intriguing. This is why we did earlier this week the webinar with Katie and Jeff Hernandez to really, well, there you go.
Thank you.
Because it's really showing this is what you can do in a tasteful way. As I said, the questions that were coming, you know, you and I think we've been talking about this for how many years now?
Right.
How many? 10? Whatever. Designers still don't know. The questions came fast and furious.
Wow.
And we had to, at some point, it was like way past the hour. I'm like, we got to stop. I'm sorry. But I'm going to do a bunch of reels to answer the questions that we didn't get to. Because, you know, we more and more questions were coming as people realized, wait, what? And it just showed me again, they don't even, what we're talking about here is way above the level that they comprehend at the moment.
Oh, Sabine, are you going to do this again or make it a regular event?
What, the live event or the webinar?
The webinar.
We're definitely doing, and you and I need to talk, things for our pro members. We can't do this all the time for everybody. Because, I mean, we have a lot of things going on. We have our unboxed event coming up on December 5th. So we do all these events already. But I definitely want you to talk to our members and the spiel that you gave at our event as well. Because we're back to, yes, they might have heard about it, but it doesn't click till they heard it like 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like everybody else. They're like, oh, yeah, I got it. And they're like, wait, what? And Katie did an awesome job with really very intricate, as you said, it doesn't come across on the screen, but she did super intricate, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Can you see this? No.
Yeah.
No, sorry about that. There's super intricate patterns on the little triangles, and she did little different patterns on this area as well as then the triangle area here and so on. And it's very classy. So it's understated, which I wanted, but also intriguing because people were going, wait, what? You can do what? This is digital. Right. And then the fun part obviously is that you can open up the card so that you really see the back as well, which is you see the embossing here and the straight one here.
All right, guys, listen, Sabine.
We gotta go.
Yeah, we got. But first, can we get everybody to wave? I want to get like a screenshot. Everybody looking happy, like, hey, this is fun.
Hey, do you want me to put my thing back on?
Oh yeah.
Hold on.
Oh, hold on. There we go. Oh, I got you. I got you covered too.
You got to put yours on too.
I got to put mine on.
Oh boy.
All right. Wave. Cheers.
Oh, that's funny. Well, guys, listen, thank you so much for being an awesome group. And a big thank you to our sponsors, MGI Digital Technology, Paper Specs, and the FSCA for doing an amazing job in supporting us. We really appreciate it. And Matt, Mr. Red Bear, I hope you're digging all this AI that I'm sending your way in terms of the super scary AI avatars I'm making of you. But you did a great job, man. Thank you for leading the discussion.
Thank you for being the guinea pig and testing the heck out of things and sharing it.
And Jeff, bottle of bourbon on the way, bro.
Oh, Jeff won the bourbon. Very cool.
Oh, dang it.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.